Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen and only mode until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to your first speaker, Mr. Gary Brown. Sir, you may begin.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight for the National Kidney Foundation's Coffee House Conversations. Tonight, we're going to be talking about what you need to know about diabetes and your kidneys. The program's been funded by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, and it's the second topic in a three-part series called Diabetes, Your Actions Can Make a Difference. And you might be wondering why the National Kidney Foundation's hosting a series about diabetes, and with the help of our speakers, you'll know why. With us tonight is Dr. Linda Sezik. Dr. Sezik is a nephrologist at Duke University Medical Center. She's dedicated to helping patients and is interested in sharing information that allows people to make good decisions about their health care. And we're also going to hear from Kevin. Kevin has type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease, and tonight he's going to share a little bit about his own experience living with diabetes and kidney disease. This call will let you know it'll be about an hour and a half long, and the way it works is that our two speakers are going to talk for about 30 minutes combined, and then after that, we'll give you guys a chance to ask questions and share your own thoughts. Right now, everybody's phones are muted unless you're a speaker, and when it's time to open up the discussion for your questions, we'll let you know, and we'll let you know how you can do that. So what I'd like to do now, without further ado, is to introduce our first speaker for the evening. This is Kevin. Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing real good.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
Okay. Well, first, I learned I had diabetes a little over 25 years ago, and along with that, I was in denial for quite a long time, many years. I ignored the fact that I was diabetic. I did nothing about it. My attitude about having diabetes was, I'm not going to change my life for this thing. My mom, dad, even grandparents all had diabetes. I saw what they went through, but I still didn't take my own condition seriously. A couple of years passed, and I found myself one day being rushed into the hospital with a glucose level over 400. My diabetes had gotten worse because, well, I just didn't follow the recommendations. I had to go on a strict diet. I started taking oral medications. Another 15 years passes by, and I face laser to my eyes, poor circulation, numbness in my limbs, my legs, and looking back on it now, I know I could have done a lot more to take care of myself if I had taken the diabetes seriously. How I learned I had chronic kidney disease, well, I was starting to have more and more problems with my diabetes, and I couldn't get any of my numbers under control, my glucose levels. I knew I had some problems with my kidneys because I could feel it. I was having pain, swelling, difficulty urinating. Now I went to my primary care doctor about my symptoms, and he ran some tests. And when they came back, I found out I had chronic kidney disease. I was in late stage 4 and would need to start dialysis soon.
How are you feeling now, Kevin?
Well, I guess that's the great news. I feel great since I've been on dialysis.
Terrific.
I feel better than I have in, well, better than I have in years.
How long have you been on dialysis?
2 years now.
Okay.
And along with that, my quality of life has gotten so much better. Within 3 months of starting treatments, I had shed nearly 45 pounds of fluid. I was actually having breathing problems. I was in COPD and before beginning dialysis. And when I was first diagnosed, I was curious about how this whole thing worked and why it worked. And I read everything I could. I went on different websites and just tried to educate myself as best as I could. I wanted to learn everything about it and wanted to get the best treatment that I could.
Sure.
And I realized that I had to educate myself. You can either be a patient or you can be a participant. And the more you know, the better your treatment's going to be.
So tell us, what are some of the things that you do now?
Well, keep a close check on my glucose level at least 2 or 3 times a day if I'm running normal, more than that if I'm not, and with a finger stick. And I check my blood pressure a couple of times a day. I enjoy cooking and eating healthy meals. Meal planning is it's a discipline to me. It's not a barrier. You just have to make up your mind and stick with it. You can go to regular restaurants. They'll make substitutes if you need it. All you have to do is ask them. And I get a lot of support from my family. Everyone's involved. My wife's great. She helps me out the most. Got 3 daughters, 4 grandchildren. I help them. They help me. And we all get along pretty well.
You're a lucky man.
Indeed I am. They're aware of a lot of the stuff I'm going through, the diet restrictions, the lifestyle changes, and they're supportive, and that's what counts. You've got to have a good support system in there. My middle daughter, she even went to the dialysis classes with me so she could learn what I was going to be going through with me. One of the things that happened with the diabetes is that I am now legally blind. I haven't been able to drive for 10 years. So my daughter's helped me with my transportation. My wife does too. She drives me to the dialysis appointments. Of course, I kick in. I help back. I babysit. Love to cook. And the girls say when Dad invited to dinner, it's usually because he's doing the cooking. But I enjoy my family. My main job now is, it's babysitting my youngest granddaughter, Chloe. She's 14 months old. And one of the things that I want to do is be around to see her graduate high school.
Great. Great stuff. So diabetes and kidney disease runs in your family. You get screened for both?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I caution my daughters to do the same thing, to get screened at least once a year just to make sure that everything is running normal for them, that their numbers are in normal ranges. They've seen what I've gone through, so they do take it seriously and get screened. Unfortunately for me, I learned my lesson a little too late to avoid kidney failure. One of my grandfather's wise sage sayings in his Irish brogue, he would say, son, you get too soon old and too late smart. So, yeah, he was right.
He was.
Yeah. So my advice is, learn from my experience, you don't wait. Start today to do what's recommended. Take care of yourself, your diabetes, and if you have kidney disease, look after that too. If you have diabetes and you haven't been checked for kidney disease, today's topic is going to help you learn and how to do this.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much for sharing your story. We really appreciate you joining us tonight. It's a good story in that it sounds like you're doing really well now, and you got the full support of your family there, and that's one of the most important things. So what I'd like to do now is turn the call over to our expert, Dr. Sizek. We're so glad to have you here with us tonight, Dr. Sizek. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's my absolute pleasure, and I guess I want to thank Kevin for joining us, because I think that the biggest lesson that Kevin has taught all of us, you should see the big smile on my face, is that he is not his diagnosis. I had a person say that to me once, I am not my diagnosis. I am me, and my diagnosis exists. And I just thought that was so beautifully simple. And Kevin, that's what you embody. You learned about your diagnosis so that you could deal with it and put it aside and not let it run your life. And that's what I hope that everyone will be able to impart this evening. But one thing I'd like to remind everybody is that the stuff that we're going to talk about tonight is general information. If you have specific concerns about your own health, and frequently people get into this with the question, I'm happy to help answer, but this conversation doesn't replace a conversation with your doctor, because there is something magical about being in the same room with you, to really understand the right answer that is specific to you.
Well, that's exactly right. I appreciate you saying that, Dr. Sizek. And why don't we get to it here? And why don't you just explain a little bit about about kidney disease and chronic kidney disease?
Well, the kidneys are my passion. Urine is my life. I remember during a fellowship, I'd walk around with big things of urine in my pocket, and I'd get into elevators, and people would look in my pockets, and they'd go, "Oh, you're a renal fellow." And I would say, "Yeah, just be glad I'm not a GI fellow." But the kidneys do more than just make urine. Making urine is a big part of what they do. They're kind of like the pool cleaner of the blood. For those of you that have had the wonderful experience of cleaning out the pool filter, that little basket that collects all the bugs and the leaves, your kidneys are somewhat like that, but they do so much more. Not only do they clean out the gunk, but they also they regulate the level of the pool water. They regulate the amount of chlorine, the salts that go into the pool water. And then they do this host of other things that are really just amazing. They're responsible for a good part of your bones health, and they also help keep you from becoming anemic. They are the makers of the signal to your bone marrow to make red blood cells. Kidneys can get damaged for a number of reasons, and we're going to focus today on diabetes and hypertension to some degree, because those are the number one and number two causes of kidney disease in just about everyone. But there's a laundry list of things that can cause kidney problems. And one thing that I would like to impart upon you, and I'm going to come back to this again and again, is that there are a few very simple things that you can do to maximize your health. And one of them is kind of maximizing your family's health. If you find out you have kidney disease, reach out to all of your first-degree relatives, because kidney disease runs in families, particularly in the African-American community. So if you have kidney disease or someone you love, a first-degree relative has kidney disease, find out about the rest of the relatives in the immediate family. Encourage them to just go for a simple physical. And we'll talk about that, about how to understand if you have kidney disease or not. But that's the number one thing that you can do is, at the Thanksgiving table, look around and make sure everybody knows what their urine looks like. Kind of an odd thing to talk about at Thanksgiving dinner, but I wanted to paint a picture so that it really stuck in your head.
Right.
You can have acute kidney disease, but we're going to be talking about chronic kidney disease. Chronic is what means that it's happened over a period of time, and we abbreviate everything in medicine so that we sound smarter than we actually are. And chronic kidney disease, we call it CKD, for chronic kidney disease.
Hey. So, I learned from my friends at the National Kidney Foundation that there's actually different stages of CKD, or chronic kidney disease, as you say. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the different stages?
Well, this, again, is part of the doctor speak that everyone needs to embrace and take a little tongue-in-cheek. I tend to make a lot of jokes because I like to demystify things. Kidneys are fairly straightforward, and the one thing that I want to tell you about doctor speak is we've got a number of different terms that all kind of mean basically the same thing. You could talk about creatinine clearance, you can talk about glomerular filtration rate. You'll hear these things, and if you don't understand them, and I'm not going to get into the definitions now, ask. You've got to be the soldier, not the victim. If someone's talking to you and they don't really make themselves clear, you ask. But one of the things that we've done to try to demystify creatinine clearance and glomerular filtration rate is just to convert these numbers that really are measures of how much blood is cleaned to stages. One is best. Five represents the least amount of kidney function. So when you hear about stages, stage 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, is it like golf? Yeah, it's like golf. Low is good. Stage 1 is good. High is not as good. So as you go from stage 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, you have increasing numbers of complications related to the kidney disease, and you're getting, unfortunately, probably closer to needing dialysis.
So how does diabetes cause kidney disease?
Well, the diabetes can affect anything that has a blood vessel in it. So if you go from the top of your head down to the bottom of your feet and you think of all the organs that have blood vessels in them, diabetes can injure those organs if you don't have proper control of your blood sugar. The kidneys are the most blood vessel-filled organs in the body. They are just two little, they're not so little, they're about the size of a good-sized fist, clusters of pulsating, beautiful, gorgeous, rich blood vessels. So because they are so rich, they are so vascularized, they're just blood vessels, diabetes, when it's not controlled, can affect them. And what it does is it basically makes the arteries and all the little blood vessels thick. And that thickness impairs their ability to function. And then eventually the blood vessel just kind of pinches off because it becomes so thick. Now, of course, I could use a lot of doctor speak and be far more technically correct, but that's basically the concept by which diabetes and higher blood sugar can affect kidney function. And it is, of course, as I reiterated, I'll reiterate now, that probably the most common cause of needing dialysis for those people who are on dialysis here in the United States.
So chronic kidney disease sounds like a serious condition.
It is. And it's serious for two reasons. First of all, you want to, I'm going to get back to this theme of being heart smart again and again. You want to, first of all, know about your kidney disease and jump on it and attack it to save kidney function, to slow the progression, or maybe halt the progression, stop it from getting worse. But when you have kidney disease, it generally means that if those blood vessels are not happy, there are other blood vessels in your body that are equally as unhappy. And I'm going to get back to the heart smart sort of principles if we get into discussions of diet. Because if you do things that are heart smart, you're going to do good things for your kidneys. And if you've got kidney disease, you know that the other blood vessels in your body are not happy.
Right.
So the kind of things that you should be aware of if you do have kidney disease are, first of all, blood pressure. Kidney disease can cause high blood pressure. High blood pressure can cause kidney disease. It's one of those chicken or the egg sort of things. So anytime your kidneys don't work as well as they could, you need to, whether it's the cause or the effect, really jump on blood pressure and make sure that you have just absolutely fabulous blood pressure on medications that you like, that you can tolerate, that are good for your quality of life, that you don't cheat and not take one day or another because you don't like the side effects. Talk
right
to your doctor. Make sure that you're taking them. Heart disease. If people have kidney disease, I think about it as a rule of thumb. My mother has kidney disease. And when she needed to go to the OR, I forced the doctor to prove that she didn't have heart disease because the two go hand in hand. So if you have something wrong with your kidneys, remember that the other blood vessels in your body may not be as happy. And pay attention to that chest pain. Pay attention to that shortness of breath. It may not be just that you're getting old. It may be that you have heart disease also. And that's something you definitely don't want to sweep under the carpet.
Right.
Anemia. Another thing that goes hand in hand with kidney disease, which is one of those things that makes it serious. And it's one of those things that really impacts quality of life, because what are doctors here for? Why are we on this earth? We're put on this earth to help others and to enjoy our lives. And when your blood count is low, it's not so easy to do that. Kidney disease can also cause problems with bones. And I talked a little bit about that before, and since I'm kind of sounding like a laundry list, I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail there. But the most important thing when you have kidney disease, the reason that it's serious is because we'd love to do anything that we could to slow that progression so that you don't you delay the need for dialysis or transplant as long as you possibly can. And then finally, actually, I was going north to south. The last thing would be blood vessel disease in the legs. Kidney disease can cause problems with nerves, which I think we'll talk about. You might amputations and strokes. And, you know, I'm actually starting to sort of scare myself, so I'm going to stop. But I think that I hope I'm painting the picture that there is a lot of reason why we should think of ourselves as soldiers, not as victims in battle against kidney disease.
And it sounds like the kidneys affect a lot of other things other than just kidney disease affects a lot of other things aside from just the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, how does a person with diabetes know if they have chronic kidney disease?
Well, the person with diabetes and any other person, any family member that you want to talk to, will do it the same way. A simple blood test for a molecule called creatinine and peeing in the cup. Now, many people don't like to get their blood drawn. We can go there and we could talk about that, but you just got to tell them to soldier up and do it. That simple blood test can give you a sense for how well your kidneys work. And creatinine is like golf, high is bad, low is good. The normal creatinine, it should be around 1.0 or less. And it's a very complicated measure, and that's why we get into all these fancy formulas. But just know your creatinine. If you get screened for kidney disease, ask your doctor what your creatinine is, and then make sure that you convince yourself that it's normal. The burden is on the doctor, of course, but I want to put the burden on you all to know your number and make sure that you know that it's normal and really understand it. The other thing that you can do is pee in the cup. Oh, my gosh. My favorite thing to do is to ask people to pee in the cup. And I've got a lot of colorful phrases about urine and, oh, that's my gold, and et cetera, et cetera. But the peeing in the cup doesn't hurt at all. Getting blood taken does, but no one ever got hurt peeing in the cup. So if you haven't peed in the cup for a doctor lately, do it. If they don't ask you for it, force them to do it for you. Because the presence of protein in the urine is a wonderful early signal for kidney disease. I always explain to people that if you see, I'll tell you my story. I set my mother's lawn on fire on the 4th of July. The lawns here in North Carolina are very dry. I lit a sparkler for my child, and I said, go across the lawn into the cul-de-sac and play with the sparkler. A spark flew off the sparkler, hit the dry lawn, and it started to burn. I didn't wait for the whole front lawn to be in flames before I jumped up and tried to stomp it out. My sister didn't wait for the whole lawn to be in flames before she ran to get the hose. We jumped on it as soon as we saw it. That first spark of the lawn is protein in the urine. You don't wait for the creatinine to go up before you start doing something about it. So the whole idea of peeing in the cup and looking for small amounts of protein called albumin, I cannot underscore enough. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about a Duke nephrologist, and if you're a UNC fan, this will really give you a smile, trying to stomp out the fire that she set on her mother's lawn when you go to pee in the cup, because I can't underscore how important it is.
And not only are you a doctor, you're also a firefighter.
Apparently so.
Now, how would you manage kidney disease?
Well, it depends on what the cause is, and I can sum it up in two words, heart smart.
Okay.
Anything that is good for your heart is going to be good for your kidney. Now, there are a lot of types of kidney disease. But if we put all of the laundry list, the huge long list of rarer diseases aside, and we focus on diabetes and high blood pressure, which is 95%+ of the causes of kidney disease in this country, if you think about what's good for your heart, your kidneys are going to be happy. Good blood pressure control, good blood sugar control, good lipid control, and we'll get back to that in subsequent questions. But the one thing that I just want to really underscore is that seeing your doctor and looking at all of the aspects of your health is really going to be important. You may not be doing things that you would specifically say, well, these are for my kidneys, but if it's heart smart, you're doing it for your kidneys.
So, you know, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, doctor. If somebody has diabetes and kidney disease, what can they do to help keep their kidneys working as long as possible?
Well, that's really the million-dollar question, isn't it? Heart smart, control blood sugar. There's lots of great studies, really solid evidence that shows that if you take care of your diabetes and that's the cause of your kidney disease, you're going to do wonders not just for your kidneys, but also for your blood, your nerve cells, for your eyes, and for anything else that can be affected by the diabetes. Best way to do it is diet, exercise, and medicines if you need it. People often have emotional reactions to starting insulin. You have to embrace your emotions. You have to really understand why you feel the way you do and know what you need to do and try to figure out how to convince yourself that it's the right thing. We talked about a blood test called creatinine to measure kidneys. The blood test that gives you a sense for how well you're doing, kind of your report card on your diabetes, is your hemoglobin A1C. The finger sticks that Kevin talked about are kind of like your little pop quizzes. How well are you doing right at that moment? The hemoglobin A1C is like your midterm and then your final exam. How well have you done over the last couple of months? And the goals are somewhat controversial, but if you're less than 7, you're doing pretty well. Blood pressure, another incredibly important thing, just because, as I said, it can either be the cause of the kidney disease or it can be the result of the kidney disease. But regardless of whether it's the cause or the result, if it's not under control, it will make it worse. And our magic number there is 130 over 80. Now, not every number has to be 130 over 80 or below, but the vast majority of them do. And the one thing that I want to impart upon everyone is that frequently it takes more than one blood pressure medicine. I've got some folks, bless their hearts, that are on 6, and they come to me and they complain about the pill burden. And we strategize about how to line up the pill bottles to make it easier to take. But the bottom line is, if you have big, bad blood pressure, you might need that many medications. And blood pressure control, the number of your blood pressure is so important. There are certain types of blood pressure medicines that might be more beneficial than others. Diuretics, the ones that make you pee more, sometimes are incredibly helpful. And the one thing that I'd like to really focus on in terms of diet, actually the two things in diet, are salt and kind of fats, cholesterol and lipid control. Cholesterol and lipids are fairly straightforward. We know for a long time that if you have a high cholesterol, bad lipids, your blood vessels are not going to be happy, kidneys included. So doing things that are heart smart with respect to avoiding fatty foods and really maximizing fruits and vegetables and lean meats, those types of things, are ideal. But leaving that topic and really going to salt, 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 that is the one thing that we're really starting to focus on nationally, and the importance of salt reduction in really helping to keep people from having heart attacks and strokes and kidney disease.
Right. So lifestyle, can lifestyle help lessen the risk of getting kidney disease or at least slow the progression of kidney disease?
Yes. You know, I think that all of the things that we're talking about in terms of diet and doing things that are heart smart are all kind of wrapped up into together. If I say lower your stress, then the naysayer would say, well, how in the world does stress affect my kidneys? But lowering stress, keeping blood pressure down, doing things that are heart smart helps blood vessel health in general, and that will help kidneys. So diet is the best place to start, and I really love being redundant because it really drives home certain points. Avoid fatty foods, diet that's high in fruits and vegetables, and all of the things that cardiologists would just give you a big hug for are ideal. Weight control, you would be surprised. There are some kidney diseases that are directly caused by obesity. And I would love to say that I have a BMI that's 25 or less. I don't. And I work at it every day, and I think about it every day.
That's body mass index, right?
Body mass index, yes. And 25 is the magic number for women. Above it, one would call me obese. It is what it is. I get on the scale, I see the number. I don't like the number, but I can't hide it. That number needs to be lower in me. And I would encourage everyone to understand how weight can play a role. Physical activity, by weight control and by doing things that are heart smart is another indirect way to help your kidneys. Medications that can damage the kidneys are something to really focus on. And when you do find out whether or not you have kidney disease, if you do find out that you do have kidney disease, make sure that every doctor that comes into contact with you knows about it. Because there are certain medicines, from as simple as ibuprofen over the counter to things like bowel prep for that colonoscopy that, we all love getting so much, that can affect people with kidney disease in different and very bad ways. So make sure that every doctor that comes into contact with you knows that you have kidney disease and they are cool with the medicine playing nicely with your kidney.
Right.
I'm always reluctant to say that any of the supplements, the over-the-counter supplements or things that are gotten in markets are safe. If it's not controlled by the FDA, I have no idea whether it's safe or not. So be wary of that. Alcohol in moderation is important. And lastly, I can't underscore this enough. One cigarette a year is too many. We know that cigarettes cause lung cancer and head and neck cancer. Those things go right to your kidneys and squeeze down on the blood vessels. And you've lost a few cells with every puff.
Wow. Well, Kevin had mentioned his family earlier, and I guess now's a good time to ask the question, should family members be tested for diabetes or chronic kidney disease?
Most definitely. We think about breast cancer and how if a woman has a first-degree relative who has breast cancer, then she could carry that genetic mutation. We think about colon cancer the same way. If you've got two first-degree relatives with colon or rectal cancer, you're at higher risk. Kidney disease, we haven't narrowed in on all of the genes yet. We found one about 2 years ago, which was incredibly exciting because when you know what the problem is, you could work toward the solution. But we haven't found them all. But that doesn't mean that there's not a familial predilection. What that means is if someone in your family that you are somehow related to, share a last name with, enjoy Thanksgiving dinner with, is on dialysis, has been on dialysis, or has kidney disease, everybody in the family should be checked because there's so much about how it's passed through the generations that we don't know that's just absolutely essential. We can prevent so much disease by getting families checked.
Dr. Sizek, thank you so much. This really has been extremely helpful, educational, informative, and I can't thank you enough for joining us. You covered a lot of important information here, and what we'd like to do now, if you don't mind staying with us for a little while, is we're going to open up the discussion to all the people on the call tonight, and we encourage people to ask questions. Your questions could be about diabetes, they could be about kidney disease, self-management, but what we'll do now is we'll turn the call over to the operator for a second. He can give some instructions on how we can go ahead and do the call. Operator, are you there?
Yes, I am. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, you may press star 1. Please make sure you unmute your phone and record your name when prompted so I may introduce your question. And if you would like to remove your question at any time, you may press star 2. And we do have a question from Ms. Virginia Ziffer. Your line is up.
You're on the line. Hi. What's your question?
My question is the creatine. I'm holding my last blood test, which was I have diabetes number 2, and my blood test was June 2nd. My creatine is good. It's 0.60.
Congratulations.
But when you hear this, my microalbumin random urine is 42.7, and it's supposed to be no more than 17. So,
So you have that first blade of grass that's warm. Okay, now, so think of me with my sparkler, setting my child and setting my mother's lawn on fire. One blade of grass is now warm. And I'll answer your question directly, and then I'll kind of make it a little broader so everyone can really take advantage of your question. There's no way that you could have caught this earlier. If it's going to happen, you couldn't have caught it earlier, and that is just absolutely fantastic. What I would encourage you to do is to make sure that your doctor is aware that that's abnormal, and then to talk about all the treatment options. Blood pressure control, blood sugar control, certain medications, lipid control, all of the things that we talked about that are heart smart can reverse that. But let's be pessimistic and say that you can't reverse it. You will just keep it at that level for the rest of your life. That's fine. That would be a win also. Because like I said, you could not have caught this earlier. But it does require that real attention to heart disease. Now, to kind of expand your question so that everyone can really take a part in the lesson that we can learn from this is that there's abnormal, very bad, and then this is something I need to do about, and this is my wake-up call. Protein, the reason that you do it, the reason that you pee in the cup is to find abnormal results because it's your warning signal. It's the lights going on the railroad track, but the train isn't coming through yet. So pee in the cup as often as you can. People with diabetes should pee in the cup twice a year, looking precisely for what you found, ma'am. And I would encourage everybody to do that. So actually, this is good news. If you told me that you had had like 4 or 5 grams of protein in your urine, then I would have had a less enthusiastic response. But just a little bit of albumin like that means that you have caught it early and you can really jump on it and make it go away.
Thanks, Dr. Sizek. Thanks very much. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate that. And do we have another call there?
Yes. Our next question comes from Cynthia Hicks. Your line is open.
Hi, Cynthia. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm fine.
What's your question?
I am a 51-year-old diabetic. Been diabetic since I was 13, so juvenile diabetic. And I had a creatinine of 1.4 in 2007, which I was kind of pleased with after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back August 15th of 2007, just 2 months later, and my creatinine was 3.9.
Hmm.
And my diabetic doctor had said, what had happened is that I had a colonoscopy. And I took some breath, and when I woke up, I said, I'm really, really sick. I can't think. There's something wrong in my brain. Everything's gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward up since 2007, I'm kind of confused because they say it's not from diabetes, even though I am a diabetic, it's hard to prove it. But my doctor says you can't go from a 1.4 to 3.9 in 2 months or a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not possible. It takes years to get to that level.
Right.
And I was having it checked like every year. I went from stage 5 back down to stage 4. My GFR got down to like a 14 and 15. I stayed around a 19 and 20 for a year, and actually went to the kidney doctor today, and I'm finally back up to like 24.
Oh, great.
But I can go, like in January and February, I went down to 17 and got like really sick. My GFR was 17. And the weird thing about it is that through the whole thing, it's minimum microalbumin that I run, and I only had one time that I ran my especially less than 30, I was an 81. And my last one was a 14. So they can't figure out, and I'm anemic. I've actually done IV iron therapy, take Aranesp shots. I'm always really sick from it. And then I developed heart disease from it. So it's been one thing after another, and I don't really understand the difference between if it had been from diabetes, how would you feel with my symptoms or extreme fatigue, headaches, cramping, have a horrible time concentrating, and I'm always anemic.
Dr. Sissick, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, so I think that there are really two issues. So what happened in the past, and there's something that I think I can conjecture, I can guess as to what I think the cause is. Of course, having never been in the same room with you, it's a guess. But I can do that. And then we could use that to let everybody else know something that you learned the hard way, that we have to really prevent this kind of thing from happening to others. And then second, we can comment on how you're feeling right now, and we can use that to, again, teach people about the fact that if you don't look for it, you don't find it. So you're right. Going from a creatinine of 1.4 to 3.9 in 2 months is distinctly atypical for diabetes. It's not that aggressive. It's a very slow process, which is good because it means that if you get screened on a regular basis, you will know about it, and you can do the right things to take a slow process and make it even slower. But the risk that I immediately thought of when you talked about the bowel prep is one that we've identified over the last couple of years, that not all regimens to clean out your bowels for colonoscopy play nicely with the kidneys. Some of them have magnesium in them. Some of them have phosphorus in them. And they can clog the blood vessels and the tubes within the kidneys and cause a more acute kidney failure. Now, the good thing about it, the bad thing about it is kidneys fail, and that is never good. But it can slowly reverse, which sounds like is really what's been happening to you over the last year or so. I'm sure it's not going as fast as you would want. But it is, you are getting a little bit back, and that can happen. I think that that first bucket of what everyone who's listening can learn from that is when you know you have a creatinine that's not exactly normal. So everyone needs to know their creatinine. We've already established that. And I will find out where everybody lives, and if you don't know your creatinine in a month, I will knock on your door. But when everyone knows their creatinine, if it's abnormal, then every doctor that you run into that wants to give you a slip of paper and says, please put this in your mouth, then you need to say, is this going to play nicely with my kidneys? Because my kidneys don't work as well as they should, remember. So you have to ask every single time. Nephrologists know, but I like to be redundant and obnoxious because kidneys are precious. So don't be afraid to be redundant and obnoxious.
Right.
Blame it on that woman from Duke. The second thing is really your symptoms. The bad thing about kidney disease is you don't have symptoms that make you go right to think about your kidneys. Your fatigue, the not feeling right, not thinking right. Many people say, oh, I'm just getting old, or, oh, I must be depressed, or, oh, I'm overweight, and that's why I don't have energy. the very vague symptoms that are associated with kidney disease don't always point to kidney disease. So that's why anyone who's at risk really needs to have themselves tested. And I'm speaking to the rest of the audience on that point. I would love to help you in any way I can. And if you know, you want some more specific information, please feel free to just email into the NKF and we'll try to get you some more specific information that can help you learn about your disease.
Dr. Sizek, that's exactly right, and I was just going to remind folks about that. Cynthia, thanks very much for the question. I appreciate you listening in tonight. And just so everybody out there knows that if you want more information, you can go to the National Kidney Foundation's website. And if you go to www.kidney.org, you can get a ton of information about kidney disease. And if you go to www.kidney.org/coffeehouse, we're going to have a list of resources available for you on this topic. You can also feel free to call us anytime. It's a toll-free number at 800-622-9010. I'll give you that number several times before the end of this call so you don't miss it. But again, it's 800-622-9010. And there are people standing by from 9 to 5 Eastern Standard Time that can help you with any of your questions or direct it to the appropriate person. And also, just so you know, we're going to have a package of resources that will be sent out to everybody that's on this call. So within this package is going to be a list of organizations, websites, telephone numbers, and a bunch of other good stuff that you can contact for more information. So tell you what, operator, before we go to our next calling question, let me ask a question that we just got in emailed to us here. And the question comes from John. And it looks like this is another question for Dr. Sizek. So Dr. Sizek, John is asking, how much water should he drink a day? And is it better to drink water room temperature, or is it better to drink it when it's ice cold?
So this is a good question, because there's a lot of when people want to take control of their diet, they read a lot on the internet. And the internet, when you on addresses like www.kidney.org, has fabulous information. But then you go to some of these other addresses, and it's kind of a little bit quirky. So I really want to spend time on this, because this is something that we do every day, and you can feel really good about yourself by doing the right thing. Water is important if you have kidney stones. If you have kidney stones, it is generally recommended that you pee 3 liters a day. So that's a Diet Coke and a half, one of those big 2-liter bottles. That's a lot of urine. If you don't have kidney stones, then you should focus on a healthy diet with the right amount of water. Now, what is the right amount? Well, the magic 8 glasses 8 times a day, you don't need to force yourself to drink. Your body is beautiful in its ability to recognize when your salts are off balance, and it makes you thirsty. That's what thirst is. It's a free water deficit, and your body telling you, go drink water. So I always tell people to eat, drink, and be merry, to enjoy their meals, to drink until they're not thirsty, but don't feel the need to force it, because there's really nothing magic about making a lot of urine unless you have kidney stones. The temperature of the water, it makes no difference either. My grandmother, bless her heart, she would always have a hot glass of water in the morning because it helped something. And I will worship her forever. And I never told her that, all right, Joshy, you know, that's really not that important. But it really isn't.
Thanks. And John had one other addendum to his question. He said, is natural unsweetened cranberry juice good for our kidneys?
So cranberry juice and some other fruit juices have citric acid in them. And citric acid is one of those things that can keep salt from precipitating. So if you have kidney stones, sometimes doctors will give you potassium citrate, Eurosit. It could be called a number of different medications. From that, people have assumed that cranberry juice will give you that same therapeutic benefit from the citric acid, but you'd have to drink gallons and gallons of cranberry juice to get that much citric acid. So I would give it a thumbs down, just be careful that even if it's unsweetened, it still does have a lot of sugar in it, because that's what fruits are. It's just fructose.
Right.
And it will affect blood sugar control. And again, you know, we're of course talking about keeping diabetes under control. So I don't think that the benefit is as tremendous as everyone says, and it might actually cause you harm in terms of elevated blood sugar.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And thanks, John, for sending that question in. I just want to remind people that if you can do us a favor and hang on, at the end of this call, we're going to ask about 5 or 6 polling questions. And the questions are things like, you know, did you find the conversation useful? You know, would you recommend these type of activities to friends and things like that? So that type of stuff really helps us here at the National Kidney Foundation as we create new programs and activities for patients. I guess, operator, why don't we go ahead and see if we have another caller on the line that has questions.
Great. Our next question comes from Marjorie Pico. Your line is open.
Hi. Is it Marjorie?
Yes.
Hi, Marjorie. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
And I'm so glad you're doing this, because it would help me answer a question. About 10 years ago, I had a kidney x-ray when I was living in another state, and they told me that I had a kidney and a half. For whatever reason, I don't know, that was the first time in my life I had ever heard it. Anyway, I moved to this other state, and I have recently been diagnosed as having diabetes, and I'm overweight, but I'm working on it. I've lost 15 pounds, and I'm trying to lose more. I'm not a girl. I'm not taking any medication so far, so I'm trying diet and exercise.
Right.
But I keep thinking I should go see a nephrologist and get an expert opinion as opposed to my general practitioner because of that kidney problem.
That's a very good question, Marjorie. Dr. Sizek will ask you, when should somebody go see a nephrologist?
Well, we'll talk about structural abnormalities first, and then we can kind of make it even broader. So 1 in 200 people have only one functioning kidney, just because that's the way the good Lord made them. They were born that way. That's the way they developed in utero. 1 in 200, 0.5%, it's fairly common. So if you have a kidney and a half, you might be that 1 in 200 people where the kidneys didn't separate as you were developing and you kind of have this big lump of kidney mass. The kidneys don't have to look like they look in the book, in the anatomy book, for you to be happy and healthy and have wonderful kidney function for your entire life. They can look different, but still be normal, and it's a variation on normal. So I don't know what a kidney and a half means, but that's what I don't
either. But should I have another X-ray just to see if it's gotten any worse?
Well, I think that the recommendations that I gave to everybody else apply to you probably the same, not more, not less. That you need to know what your creatinine is, and you need to pee in the cup and make sure that there's no protein there.
Right, so if those things are normal,
then you're really good. Now,
then I don't have, okay.
Yeah, if you have symptoms related to the passing of urine, and that's where the...
Well, I do. I go to the bathroom all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, then that might be a reason to get them looked at, but not because of the way they're functioning, but just because of the way they could be situated in your body, the way they could be draining. And an ultrasound is probably your best bet. So you know how well you work with your primary care physician. If you have faith in your primary care physician, then he or she can handle this. Or you can seek out a nephrologist or a urologist. The latter might be more helpful.
But the urologist.
I would talk to your primary care physician first, and an ultrasound would probably give you the most information.
All right. Thank you very kindly.
Oh, you're welcome. To expand that conversation to when do you need a nephrologist, everyone should talk to their primary care physician after they get a creatinine and a urine check. If I don't know any primary care physician that would ever hold someone back from a subspecialist, and you should always feel comfortable in reaching out to subspecialists. But many of the things that nephrologists do can be done by a good primary care physician. And by you making sure that they're doing the right things, you're also going to learn about it. So the when do you need a nephrologist is a conversation that you should have with your primary care doc, and you can always reach out to us, and we're happy to provide you good general advice.
Great. Great advice. Thank you, doctor. And thank you, Marjorie, for the question. That was a very good question. And just remind people one more time that we have packages of resources that are going to be sent out to everybody that signed up for the call. And again, it's going to have lists of organizations and websites and phone numbers. You can always call us here toll-free at the Kidney Foundation. I'll give you the number again. It's 800-622-9010. And you can always go to our website, which is www.kidney.org. Operator, do we have another question on the line?
Yes, we do. It comes from Linda. Your line is open.
Okay. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good. What's your question for us tonight?
Okay. I have had type 2 diabetes for the past 25 years. I was able to manage it for the first 10 on diet and exercise, but now I'm on medication, and 8 years ago I got CKD. My question is that my EFGR is running at about 55, but my creatinine is in the normal range, and my microalbumin is also low, and I can't figure that out.
So you and I are we're a meeting of the Lindas. So you
okay.
know this is going to be a fabulous conversation. Are you Linda with an I or a Linda with a Y?
With an I.
Oh, see, I'm Linda with a Y.
Okay.
There you. But I'll still talk to you.
Oh, good. You should.
You bring into play three different things: the GFR, the creatinine, and the microalbumin. So let's talk about the microalbumin first, because that's kind of separate from the other two. The microalbumin is. Let me think of a good example. The microalbumin is the angriness of the disease. The more protein you put in the urine, the angrier whatever disease in the kidneys is. So the more active the diabetes is in your kidneys, the more protein you're going to put in your urine. So
right.
The fact that you have normal microalbumin means that it's not very active. That whatever got you to 55% of your kidney function is kind of stopped, or at least is so imperceptibly slow that it's not moving anywhere. So that is super good news.
And the creatinine, why is that also in the normal range?
Well, so here's my story. So
okay.
I am in my mid-40s. When I was a fellow in Philadelphia, I would work 12 hours on my feet in heels in my 20s. And then I'd do the 8 miles around the art museum on my rollerblades.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool then because it was the early 90s. And I just had incredible amounts of muscle mass. And my creatinine was 1.1, but my kidneys were normal. Now my creatinine is 0.8 because I don't exercise. I've got two kids. I've got a dog. Bless his heart, he's outside. Thank God he's not barking. A full-time job, a passion to help people with kidney disease, and I never exercise. The amount of muscle mass that I have on my body is nothing compared to what it used to be, and now my creatinine is 0.8. My kidney function is the same as it was 15 years ago, but my creatinine is lower because I have less muscle mass. So that's a pretty dramatic example of someone who really went all out exercising and now does nothing. But the natural aging process does that to us also. As we get older, I don't know if you noticed, but proportionally less of us is muscle and more of us is some of the jiggly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the muscle makes creatinine. The jiggly stuff doesn't make creatinine. So you, as you get older, to have the same degree of kidney function,
mm-hmm.
your creatinine actually has to fall. So generally people who have had a couple of birthday cakes or who don't have a lot of muscle for other reasons can have kidney problems even within a normal range of creatinine. And prior to the National Kidney Foundation really putting the hard sell press on primary care docs to understand creatinine clearance and understand glomerular filtration rate, your kidney disease might have gone unrecognized had someone just looked at your creatinine but not done the calculation to realize that that creatinine in you actually represents decreased kidney function. So that's one of the many components of the NKF over the years, is getting people to understand that the absolute value of creatinine is not as important as what that creatinine means for that individual.
Okay, so it doesn't matter what range that's in. It, the actual test for the kidney function is what your function is. Like the creatinine is not the alert sign. It can be in a normal range, but you can have a low kidney function.
Yeah, let me give you another example.
Okay.
Do you remember Lou Ferrigno, who was the Incredible Hulk, right?
Yes.
I love that man. I mean, he's just so... My father has congenital hearing problems, so I just love Lou Ferrigno, what he's been able to accomplish in spite of his disability.
Right.
If he had normal kidney function, because of his incredible muscle mass, his creatinine might be 1.4 because he's got so much muscle that muscle is what makes creatinine. And normal kidney function, he would just have a creatinine of 1.4 and be normal. But we had a caller just a little bit ago. Please forgive me, ma'am, I forgot your name.
Linda, the same as you.
His creatinine was 1.4.
Okay.
And at 1.4, she clearly was not normal, and she knew she was not normal. So how can two people have the same creatinine, but Lou Ferrigno be normal, and the woman, I think from West Virginia, did not have normal kidney function, but they were both 1.4?
Because
the serum creatinine, each number means a different thing in each person, depending on the amount of muscle mass they have.
Okay.
And the absolute number is not so important as the glomerular filtration rate is.
Okay.
And when you're thinking about creatinine, don't let it go up. Wherever you are today, do everything that you can to keep
it. Well, I exercise 3-4 times a week.
Good for you.
A lot of exercise. But I have one more question.
Yes.
I was put on metformin a month ago and weaning off Fluconorm. I'm concerned about the metformin considering my kidney function.
Now that is, I'm reluctant to get into specific instructions for you because...
A low dosage.
I don't know the whole story behind what's going on in your body. But
okay.
To say to everyone, you have a valid concern that metformin is a medication that needs to be very carefully dosed in people who've got kidneys that aren't working as well as they could.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're right on that borderline where one could legitimately say maybe you shouldn't be taking it.
So I'm waiting for blood work to see if it's affecting my kidneys. I've been on it a month, and I'm going to go by that.
Beautiful. I would talk to your doctor because sometimes the benefit is worth the risk.
That's the reason I'm taking it. Because the Fluconorm is no longer working.
Yeah. So, just to expand it to everyone, you're doing the right thing. You're thinking about how each of your medicines could affect your kidneys. And
right.
That couldn't be better.
Right.
And Linda, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. I hope that Dr. Sizek was able to answer your question. I think that it sounded pretty thorough. And if you have questions, further questions, you can always give us a call here, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much. And I'll tell you, operator, why don't we just take we're going to get another email question here. This question comes in to us from Kimberly. And Kimberly is wondering what factors put you at risk for getting diabetes, and if you have lots of these factors, does it mean that your risk of getting diabetes is even greater? Dr. Sizek, what do you think?
That is a super complicated question. I mean, it's really the million-dollar question, but it's so super complicated. you get into things that you have under your control and that you don't have under your control. And I like to put things into those two buckets because it's like the serenity prayer. What grant me the strength to take care of the stuff I can. You know the one I'm talking about. You don't have under control is family history. There's a certain familial predilection to getting diabetes. So you need to know about it if somebody in your family has problems with diabetes and know that you are probably at risk. But there are so many things that are under everyone's control to try to prevent diabetes. And one is the horrible diets that we have here as Americans. I am the prime example. 5 years after my second child was born, I was still doing the rubber band trick on my pants to button them up. And finally, about 2 years ago, I realized I just have to stop this, and I really started focusing on what I ate as a fuel rather than the way to enjoy my life. Eating is not for entertainment. Eating is for fueling. And I started to, you know, really focus on that. So all of the things that we do as Americans, including overeating, portions that are too big, high-fat foods, high-salt foods, smoking, drinking, all of those things contribute in a real big way to the risk of diabetes. And the single number to really focus on is some kind of weight body mass index sort of scenario to lower your risk. If you get into diet, you can also learn about glycemic index and learn how to have slower release sugars as part of your diet rather than quick release sugars, and that helps keep insulin levels low. And there are a number of things that we can do. But I think the two important things are really family history, be aware of it, because then you really need to focus on your lifestyle, and then all of those things that are easy to say but hard to do.
Great. Kimberly, thanks for emailing that question in. We thought we had Dr. Sizek stumped there, but she came through flying colors once again. operator, do we have another question on the line?
Yes, we have a few more questions in the queue.
Okay, who's next?
Nikki, your line is open.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, is this Nikki?
Yes, Nikki Hatzidakis.
Hi, Nikki, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Here's my question.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you very much for accepting my question. I would like to know, if you have an odor to your urine, does that mean it's liver or kidney? Because I have both.
I'm a mother, and I've got a dog, so we talk about poop all the time in my house, so forgive me. poop doesn't smell so good because it's waste products. You want to get waste products out of your body. Sometimes urine doesn't smell so good because of most likely the things that people eat. Animal proteins tend to have an odor to them, more so than vegetable proteins. The only time that I would ever be concerned that an odor is abnormal is if you suspect infection. Other than that, any smell to urine is probably reflective of what you're eating, and you know what they say, better out than in.
What if it smells like ammonia, or it smells like uric? Is it from uric acid or uric, whatever you want to call it?
You know, if it smells like ammonia, then it's probably related to diet, that you probably have a fair amount of animal protein intake. And that's not a bad thing. And I certainly don't want to give you the impression that that's a bad thing. But that's just your body's way of capturing the acid that comes from animal protein and making sure that it gets out into the urine. Now, the other thing that I would ask is that just make sure that it's not just a concentrated urine, that, you know, you're not like my mother who, oh, if I drink, I'll just have to pee, so I don't want to go drink. You know, make sure that you take in the right amount of fluids. Don't force them, but don't consciously avoid them, because you don't want to have a concentrated urine if you've got probably a lot going on in your body. My guess is that it's probably related to your diet, and it's not a bad thing. you know, eat a heart smart diet, eat a diet that's going to keep you healthy. And if your urine doesn't smell like roses, then that's okay. Just don't invite anybody into the bathroom with you, right?
And what about, could it be uric acid?
The uric acid doesn't smell. Ammonia smells. And they're chemically related. So I'm being technically correct by saying it's not uric acid, but you're on the right sort of pathway. Ammonia and uric acid are very similar, and they've got a nitrogen, they've got, you know, things in them that could have an odor. And like I said, it's probably related to your diet, but the two important things are make sure you're not dehydrated and you don't have a concentrated urine, and just make sure that you don't have an infection.
Okay, so it's not related to kidney or liver disease, what you're saying?
No. You eat asparagus and your urine can smell. If whatever you're eating that's making your urine have an odor would probably happen if you had the same diet, regardless of what's happening in your liver and your kidneys.
Nikki, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much for...
You're welcome, I'm sorry if you got cut off there. We're trying to squeeze in as many calls as we have, as we can, rather. We have a few minutes left here, so let's see if we have another call on the line.
Yes, we have a question from Caroline. Your line is open.
Hi, Caroline.
Yes.
Caroline, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing?
Fine. From Glasgow, Kentucky.
Hi, welcome. Welcome to the Coffee House Conversations. What's your question tonight? You're welcome.
Well, I'm really interested in this creatine, like she says, in your urine, the numbers, how high, how low, but I'm a diabetic.
Uh-huh.
Family history, dad passed away at 81, lost his eyes, lost part of his legs. My brother, 58, is in a nursing home. He is on dialysis. I'm the oldest. I'll be 68. And I'm really concerned about this diabetes and my brother that's 6 years younger than me. I think he's in denial and he won't go get checked. But what I'm worried about is I'm up at night going to the bathroom all the time, 3 or 4 times a night. I'm not sleeping. I'm on oxygen at night. I'm not sleeping well. And I'm worried about my high readings in the morning. My glucose is high in the morning. I eat a late supper. I'm trying to get away from that. I eat 2 snacks, 3 meals, but I'm eating too late in the morning, about the right time of lunchtime, but too late at night, and I'm not a good meal planner. So we don't eat at the house, me and my husband. We go out a lot, but I have good choices. I try to make the best choices I can, and I'm back on exercising. I lost 52 pounds, so I'm worried about the high readings. All my tests were normal. My A1C went from 6.8 down to 5.7. Everything's fine. Triglycerides, cholesterol, all that, blood pressure. But I'm really scared of this high readings I get in the morning. They're not high like a lot of people would really go bananas when they're in the 200s and higher and stuff. I never get there. But I'm still worried.
The family history is there.
Yes, that's family history.
Dr. Sezik, what do you have to say about that?
Caroline, this is complicated because...
It's scary, too. It's real scary.
That's the complicated part because there's the facts. And I could go over the facts, but that's not why you're scared. You started out this conversation by listing all of the badness that you've seen in people that you love. And that badness has made you scared of whatever happens. So I'm kind of worried that the emotion of this is what you're really reacting to. So
the stress.
The medical part. But I think that, you know, we can't underscore enough about how important it is for us to not feel alone, that we're not our diagnoses, that things are not destined to be. They're written in stone, and this is the way it's going to be for you, honey, and you better just accept it. You and everyone else who listens who might be identifying with you in terms of their anxiety, reach out to somebody to talk to them, a therapist, a psychologist, because, you know, support systems are really important.
Yeah, I go
I go to diabetic classes, and I'm really, I'm a fighter. I'm not going to let this get me.
Yeah, and you have to be mad at yourself for getting overly emotional, too. Now, emotion plays a wonderful role on Christmas morning when everybody's opening the presents. But when it comes time to be frightened, if it's not motivating you, you have to be mad at yourself that it's causing you more grief than it's worth. Now, so I want to make sure that everyone doesn't feel alone, that's why we do this, and that's why I'm doing this, because, you know, we're all in this together.
Appreciate all you people. I really do.
Well, you know what? Why are we on this earth but to help each other? And that's important. Embracing your emotions and talking to people about them is important. In terms of the numbers and the hard, cold medicine, I think that the most important thing that you can do is keep a log and look at it over time. Your job with blood sugar, your job with blood pressure, is not to make every single number incredibly perfect. In some people it's possible, in some people it's not. So you might routinely fail your pop quiz in the morning, but your midterm exam at a hemoglobin of 5.7, that is darn good. You know, you really need to feel good about that.
I lost 52 pounds in a year, going slow, but I put 11 pounds back on. I've taken 5 back off, and I'm on a roll, and I'm going to keep on rolling.
And a lot of what you talked about, you have control over, about planning, about, maybe eating in sometimes.
Yes, ma'am.
The one thing that I have learned is that when you set, no matter what rule you set for yourself, you will fall off the wagon. No matter how hard I try to avoid chocolate, I fall right off the wagon. And you can't beat yourself up for it. You just have to go, okay, I enjoyed that. Now I'm going to get back on. You can't say, oh, to hell with it. Oh, to heck with
we'll stretch it.
And then just, run amok in bad dietary habits. As soon as you see yourself slipping, give yourself permission to do it and then do your best. Don't feel badly about what you can't accomplish. Feel good about what you can. And don't get yourself all in a tizzy over a single number when that 5.7 is your Emmy. I mean, that's a gorgeous number. You should feel really good about it.
Yeah, well, I got out there, and I go to a lipid clinic every 4 months. I go to a preventative clinic, and they've got me all straightened out, and I've gotten a lot of help from all the people that support diabetes. They are really wonderful people, and especially the National Kidney Foundation, too. So, but I worry about can I ask you one more thing real quick? Creatine?
Yeah, sure, you can, sure.
You said yours was 0.8. Well, mine is 0.8. But I got, I told you about the H1C, but I got urea nitrogen bun. What is that, and what is creatine? K-I-N-A-S-E-C-K. It went up from 90 to 110, and then the urea went from 17.9 to 19.0. My mother died, and she had urea. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, so chlorine is the first one that went from 90 to 110, and that's just like a buffer. The salts, the sodium, and the potassium, and all of that are instrumental for normal cell function. And the chlorine is just the negatively charged part of the salt so that you don't spark. For every positive, you have to have a negative. So it's gonna fluctuate up and down. That is not a concern if it goes up and down. The BUN, blood urea nitrogen, is another way to look at kidney function. Going from 17 to 19 isn't really a clinically meaningful change. It actually is, it's affected by a number of things, including the amount of protein that you eat. So if you are a carnivore, you could have a really high BUN just because you're eating a lot of protein and you're breaking down a lot of protein.
Mm.
If you are a vegetarian and you're not a big protein eater, then your BUN should be a little on the lower side. So we don't generally use it a whole lot to make real decisions because it's affected by so many things.
Yeah.
The number that you want to keep an eye on is the creatinine. 0.8 is a great number. And, you know, if your creatinine was 1.2, or for those people out there whose creatinine is 1.4, that, you know, whatever number you're at, the gold medal is going to be if you can stay at that number for the next 50 years.
Well, I'm trying hard. What is the homocysteine?
And Carolyn, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to get you off here. But listen.
I appreciate you very much. I really do.
That's why we're doing it, and that's why I encourage you to call in here. You know, you can always call the National Kidney Foundation in the daytime, and I don't know if you've got a pen on you, but I'll repeat the number again.
Okay.
And it's 800-622-9010. And there's always people here that can, if they can't answer your question, they can certainly steer you in the right direction.
Well, I missed the first class, but I'm going to make the next one. And I'm so glad that I got back home tonight to get this one. And like I say,
I
appreciate you all.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we wish you the best of luck. And that's actually a perfect segue into what I can tell people now. If you did miss the first topic, because this is the second of a three-part series, we're going to rebroadcast that topic on August 11th. It's going to be at the same time, so it's 7 o'clock Eastern time. And the topic for that one was why managing blood sugar is so important and what you can do and what your healthcare provider can do about that. So again, it's August 11th. We're going to rebroadcast that. It was also an excellent call with some very, very good questions. And we had Dr. Tuttle on the phone with us for that call, and she was just terrific. And so we encourage everybody to listen to that. And like I said, this is the second of a three-part series. The third part of this series is going to take place on Tuesday, September 21st. Again, it's going to be at the same time, and we encourage everybody to listen to that one. The topic for that one will be communicating with your healthcare team. So if you don't want to miss either of these calls, you can always sign up online, and you can do that at www.kidney.org/coffeehouse, and that's one word, COFFEEHOUSE. So I guess having said that, what I'd like to do now is just ask people to hang on for another couple of minutes. We're going to ask some polling questions, and this is only going to take a few minutes, and it really helps us here at the National Kidney Foundation to collect some data and some information and help us to be able to offer the wonderful programs and activities such as this.
Gary, can I have one parting shot?
Absolutely, yeah. Dr. Sizek, I was just about to sort of offer that to you. And
thank you, you read my mind.
Both you and Kevin, you really were so generous with your time to share your stories and your information, and we so appreciate it here. It's the type of thing that helps the National Kidney Foundation run. So go ahead. Having said that, why don't you go ahead and offer your parting shot, as they say.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to, I'm literally on one knee and beg people to do, is to reach out to one or two family members tomorrow. Don't take the easy way out. Don't reach out to the people that you know are going to the doctors. Reach out to those people that may be the stubborn ones in the family. And please let them know that they need to be screened, because we wanted to do a lot of good with this call tonight, and it sounds like we got some really great motivated people on the phone. But let's try to do twice as much good or three times as much good by using you as our soldiers to reach out to others and tell them to make sure that they get screened. And give them the number for the National Kidney Foundation and our website address. Tell them to call.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I'll give you that information again. And thanks again for all the questions that you guys had. The questions were great. Cynthia and Linda and Marjorie and John and Kimberly and Nikki and Caroline. And I wish that we had time to get to all of the questions, but that's why we offer the toll-free number here. So you can feel free to call in. And again, it's 800-622-9010, or you can go to www.kidney.org and find a bunch of helpful information on there. And just to remind you one last time, we're going to have a package of resources that are going to be sent out to everybody that was on this call. And within the package is going to be organizations and websites and phone numbers and a ton of information that you can contact for more information if you have other questions. So, operator, I guess we'll go ahead and see if we can do these polling questions now. Is that okay?
Yes, no problem.
Okay. So I'll ask the first question, and then I'll tell you how to respond. Did you find this coffee house conversation useful? Press star 1 if the answer is yes, press star 2 if the answer is somewhat, and star 3 if the answer is no. Okay, moving on. Question number 2. Did this program make you aware of any changes that you could make to improve your health? I hope so. Press star 1 if the answer is yes, and star 2 if the answer is no. Okay, our third question here.